All right. Welcome back. Not to just our listeners, but welcome back to us. Color commentary, colorful conversations by colorful people about Christianity, culture, and race. Man, I hadn't said that in such a long time.
It has
been a while.
It has been a minute.
But in the studio, I am Marcus Lloyd, and of course with me is Antoine Malone. Antoine.
Hey, yo. Welcome. What's up, everyone? Man, it's good to be sitting here with you, man.
It is back at it once again.
Once again,
embarrassed because it's been a while. Not because we hadn't been talking about these things or there's other places we've been engaging in this. It's just, right. I know the listeners, they've been talking. They're like, hey, man, where are y'all? What's going on? What you doing?
Has it ended? Has color commentary come to an end?
No, not at all. What I would say is it's been in its cocoon phase.
Some people that's gonna make a few people chuckle. There's some of you insiders. Some of you insiders in my world particularly.
Oh really?
Yeah. I stopped using it because I made a verb out of it. I said cocooning. And then I realized that if someone just came in on the back end, that they might hear something else.
That's not what this show is about at all. We got to have colorful conversations. We get everybody's perspective. So
there will be no cocooning around here.
Here's what I would say. We do record out of the great state of Texas and currently in the city of Frisco, whose high school mascot is the raccoons, and they used to say "Go Coons" all the time. Oh, they can't say it anymore.
It's tough.
So maybe cocooning might actually,
it's supposed to be like, hey, you're in the butterfly, and you get in the cocoon, and you're gonna come out of the caterpillar. But the cocoon is the phase, so cocooning is the process of metamorphosizing.
I guess you gotta be in the. You gotta decide where you say that.
No.
If you say that in certain parts of Texas.
I just
got to
make sure I say pause or something. Make sure that first part is held.
Here's what I would say. I wouldn't use that word. You got to just keep it moving.
Just remove it. Just remove it out of the lexicon. Yes.
But anyway, if you're in East Texas, please don't say that if you're a black person. Don't be coming around.
Can we even say cuckoo? Like, can we just say like,
I can look,
we're
going to
metamorphosis. We're in the process of becoming.
Of becoming.
We're in the process of becoming.
Yes, there's things in the lab we've been working on. We've been under construction.
Definitely.
If you will.
Yes.
We're coming back because the construction is going to be later. We don't want to lose the opportunity to continue the conversation. Because we still talk. I mean, we sit and we talk about these things. We're like, oh man, we should have had the mic for that.
Yeah.
So today will be
the whole thing I started.
Yeah. So I think that's part of we've been doing it, and we're like, we just need to get in. This isn't the butterfly stage that we're alluding to, if you will. But in the meantime, in between time, this is the way that we've been communicating and been having these conversations. And so we're jumping in. What I'm mad about is that particularly at the front part of this year, you know, the conversations we were having were such juicy conversations. I mean, there was so much going on.
They're an opportunity to have conversations.
To
bring everybody in.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So the apology is that I know when you start looking back over some of the stuff that happened in the early part of the year, you know what I mean? Maybe I was thinking about the very top when we got back and you got that Cat Williams, you know, stuff going on and just some of the things in there.
All the stuff. 2024 started out. Anyway,
it was hot. And anyway,
but the butterfly, if you will, is not far away. So while you know, we're coming in with this kind of update episode, it'll be before the year's done.
No doubt.
Some new stuff. So stick around. Is what we're saying. You know, it's not a year away or nothing like that. Well, it's probably some months.
For sure. I mean, look at the year we're in. We're inside of a very
election year.
Election year, which has the opportunity to have a lot of things around Christianity, culture, and race. Have conversations.
Yeah.
So we will be having some of those conversations. We want to be a resource, obviously, for helping folks. And one of the let's talk personally, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I know there's been ways in which we both have been continually growing in the midst of this season, right? You've got some more things that you take on at the church job that you have right now. And I think even with Threaded, the organization that powers this content, this podcast, we've been seeing a lot of changes. We've had some new hires in here that I think are going to be real exciting for us and engage. We've been doing some lab work there too, building some stuff. So we can talk a little bit about that. But What you been up to, bro? Like, I think the list is like, what you been doing? Anything last
time,
fun?
Yeah, I've been doing, so you guys know I've been doing young adult ministry for a long time. Mm-hmm. So 9 years, almost 10 years.
Wow, has it been that long?
It's weird. I keep saying 9 to 10 years.
It's longer than that.
But I think I've been saying that for a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
But this year I take on a new role at the church that I'm at, where I get to be part of leading the entire adult ministry discipleship environments for adults at the church that I lead at. And so that's an exciting development. And I still get to work with young adults in the midst of that as well. So there's been this expansion of ministry opportunity and growth that I'm excited about. In many ways, the church where we're serving is in the same kind of phase of transitioning from a kind of yesterday to a kind of tomorrow. And I enjoy that part of the process.
Yeah, you do.
I enjoy that in the middle of constructing and putting things together. And so it makes me very excited to be that. So that was a new development. It kind of came out of nowhere for me. And so there's been some adjustment there, and that's played into some of our timing and how you know, we haven't been able to have conversation for color commentary conversations for a minute. But like I said, I think we can be back.
Yeah.
At least I'm back.
Yeah, yeah, coming back. And
but that's very it's exciting for us. And so be praying for us. And
I'm not. Because it's not exciting for me. I like it. I'm excited for you.
It's kind of Marcus's fault, though.
Like, I regret mostly.
I know.
Most days.
Some days.
I have.
Some days. I don't know, man. It might be necessary. It could be good pruning. In some ways.
In some ways?
In some ways.
Yeah. It's definitely forcing me to have to figure out how to do more of this without your input.
We invite more people into the conversation, and some of those people are bringing some really great skills and energy that I think will help us move forward. So.
Yeah, that's fair. I you know, again, I think everybody misses the opportunity to interact and to have us interact in certain aspects as well. So here we are, though. We're talking, man. And we in here. You know, look, I've had in the last couple of months coming in. It's no big changes like what you're doing, but you know, just. You know, just doing life. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
being,
yeah. Big cohort that we did. That was a big piece of things.
Yeah,
that took a lot of time.
Yeah, we've been beta testing a cohort all year. Coming soon to community weavers near you. So I'm excited. We'll be more official about the unveiling of that as we get in the midst of that. But that's been fun. We've had a great group walking that through.
It's a threaded cohort that we're talking about, and it was our trial run, first run. I thought it went extremely well, and the people who we engaged with when we went on a trip at the end of it, or toward the end of it, everyone seemed really engaged. Oh, so yeah. If you're looking to take another step deep into, it's an intensive, it's a commitment, but it's a commitment to learning and growing, lots of accountability, a lot of pushing you. That's going to be something to be on the lookout for as we lay that out. But anyway, yeah, so you had that going on this year.
Yeah, that going on. And, you know, I'm still in school, so I'm pushing through all the school stuff. And I got teenagers, bro. Like, you know, you've passed through this stage. Your kids are moving. Yeah. And I always say, like, you know, when your kids are really young, you know, when I've got a lot of these folks at the gym, they're having babies, and they're pushing these babies through, and they're like, oh, my gosh, I'm not getting any sleep. It's tough. And I remember when I was at that stage, and people would always say to me, like, oh, just wait. And you look at them like you want to punch them, because you're like, just wait. Like, bro, I'm in survival mode right now. I don't even know who I am. I haven't gotten any sleep. This is tough. These kids, I'm wiping a poop and pee and all that kind of stuff. And then I hit the teenage phase.
Dun, dun, dun.
This is the one everybody warned me about. This was the phase. And this has made good on all the warnings. Like, you know what I mean? I shouldn't say all the warnings, because there's a lot of warnings that my kids are not currently putting us through.
Yeah.
But as far as the activity level and having to maneuver them to all the activities, and then the ways in which their brains battle you every day when you can't, you know, my brain can't keep up with these cats anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what's
plus you're the house idiot.
Of course, yeah.
You are the house idiot.
Now, clearly, you're saying that just because that's the way they look at me. You're not actually making a claim that that's who I am on which to the time you've spent with me.
To them, I mean, you know, that's another conversation. But to them, you have no idea what you're talking
about. I've got no clue.
Yeah. You're like, you are expected to feed them. But
provide food, shelter,
and there should
clothing.
Be a house here and all this stuff.
Yeah, all that.
But other than those things, you're just useless. You're an idiot that cannot be told.
Nothing. If I those things are like, that's not how we do it anymore, Dad.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, right. Oh, we don't do that way. That's how y'all did it. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. And the fact, I remember when it's not hot anymore, right? But when they would say, okay, boomer, and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, my kids try to throw that on me. Like, I'm like,
I'm not a boomer.
I'm not
right?
a boomer. You don't even know what you're talking about right now. Like, so
plus, I don't think you want to come for Gen X because we're a different breed.
We will put hands on you.
we
keep a switchblade in the cargo pants. There's a switchblade. I wouldn't mess around with it.
Yeah, don't mess with. Yeah, you know, trust us. Our resilience levels is higher than yours.
Absolutely.
So if we're going to go back and forth, one of us is going to cry quicker than the
other. That's exactly right. And it look. Anybody who follows me on Instagram knows that I'm throwing weight around in that gym, right? And I'm coming. I show every video that I put on Instagram, I show it to my kids first. I need them to know that Daddy don't mess around. Like, I can pull them up.
Man,
you're going to
get me
down.
In trouble, man. I'm talking crazy. I'm the young adult guy, and I'm sitting here talking crazy about the next generation.
I'm talking about my generation.
You're talking about Generation Alpha.
I'm talking about Generation Lord.
You're talking about Generation Lord, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. I don't know what everybody else. I'm just telling you what's happening in my spot right now.
True, good.
No, but they're good. They're busy. They keep it. Yeah, drums and theater and all that kind of stuff.
Super talented. Your kids are trying out all kinds of stuff.
They are. They are.
And excelling at a lot of it. So
it's good. It's good. And my son is going to be driving a car. He's driving right now with us in the car. He's going to be driving himself here pretty soon. And I'm going to look back and I'm going to be like, oh,
it's gonna be like, yeah.
I don't have the time in the car with him anymore.
Honestly, that car time is, it kind of, I don't know what it is about car time, but sometimes you just can get to conversations.
Yeah,
and that you can't get to in any other setting, and it's easier to talk. I had that was definitely one of my youngest girl. Man, we had really great conversations in the car, and it felt like we could only have them in the car.
Only in the car.
Yeah. So when she started driving, or when that went away, it's like, man, I missed those conversations.
See, I still got two spots. I got the car, and then I've got when they go to bed once mom has left the room.
Oh
yeah, yeah. Okay, they're just a different thing. It's not. Yeah. They have conversations with mom when I'm not there, and they got conversations with us.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's conversations that's just us. You know what I mean? And so I still have that. I'm hoping I'll still have that once. Of course, once they drive, they come home at any time. I don't know what time they're gonna be there. I don't know if I'm gonna be.
That's gonna be an interesting thing.
It'll be
some
but
freeing stuff there too. Though.
Otherwise, good stuff, man. Yeah. You know. So let's talk about some stuff today. Like, I mean, we can still do some recaps. So I went to Montgomery last week.
Yeah, Montgomery, tell me about that.
So, you know, there's this group
First of
all, yeah, what?
Montgomery. I don't know, man.
What?
Montgomery is just a trigger word for me a little bit.
Oh, what are you still thinking about? The ferry boat incident?
I've just never been there, but for growing up, you know, I had a healthy exposure to Black history and Black heritage, and Montgomery just seemed to be a recurring city where drama was, and I didn't want to be. And so I'm like, I don't think I ever want to be in Montgomery. But shout out to the Montgomery citizens who listen to the show. Jesus loves you. And
all the little children of the world.
Be the kingdom wherever you are.
I think that's such an interesting thing, though, like just to talk about it in terms of the ways in which certain cities and certain parts of the nation are talked about in Black homes and amongst Black people, right? So in my house, like, my dad would always talk, we would go to Disney World and we would drive from Houston. Mm-hmm. And so my dad was always really specific about not stopping in Mississippi and Alabama. He was like, look, we got to get to this point and then we got to just go.
Right.
So that comes out of a history, obviously, in those areas that you're alluding to. And even when I was in Alabama, and so those of you who know me a little bit, I'm kind of a cigar dude. I like cigars. And so I have a group of friends that I smoke cigars with, and one of them travels all over the world and whatnot. And he's always talking about, hey, no matter what city you go to, let me know and I can tell you where the best cigar joint is that place, right? And so so I texted them. I was like, hey, I'm in Montgomery. Let a brother know where the cigar joint is. And they all, black dudes, and they're all like, get out. Like, you don't need a cigar. You need a way out, right? Like,
everybody sees a picture of that dude running from the cigar trailer.
Just get out. They were literally like, yo, dog, send me your GPS coordinates. I need to know where you are. Like, good luck. That's the way we thought about my government.
Keep driving.
Keep driving. Keep what are you driving. Doing there? These are the questions. So, but I was down there because I was with.
they met every city except
Montgomery. Right? Like, no, you should have known better than or that. Any we, city in we ain't Alabama, doing nothing in Montgomery. We rolling through there. But there's lots of, to your point, there's a lot of really good history. There's a lot of history. And I'll say it, some really good history in Montgomery, too, because it articulates so much about, I think, the ways in which humanity works to move towards liberation and back into its natural state of freedom that God has created us to be. And so that's really a monument to people who fight for freedom and a monument to the way humanity tries to stifle freedoms for power, money, and other types of things. So I was down there with a bunch of church leaders and ministry leaders and nonprofit leaders from all over the country who were kind of down there to do the tour of Brian Stevenson's stuff. He's got his EGI, the Equal Justice Initiative, and they've got three major, if I can call it, monuments and museums down there. They've got one that's the Legacy Museum, which is a pretty robust museum that kind of walks you from enslavement into mass incarceration. It's got all these kind of little segments, right? And lynching's a big section of it.
Yeah.
Reconstruction, civil rights movement, that kind of thing. Then they've also got the Peace and Justice Memorial, which is, I wanted to say affectionately called the Lynching Museum, but I don't think you can use that phrase.
I don't know about affectionate.
I don't know if that phrase works.
Maybe not for us.
With that particular thing. Yeah, but it's a lynching memorial, which is a very powerful thing. And then they also have, oh gosh, I may have gotten these backwards, but they have now a new memorial park down there that they're still building. They're going to open it up fully on Juneteenth of this year. But it's a lot of kind of right along the Alabama River where they used to bring the slaves in through that river and where they drop them. And so they've have all these artists that have created this really amazing sort of I'm not going to say labyrinth, right? But it's a way in which you walk through this park and there's all this art and memorial monuments and things where you can read about and you can read testimonies, if you will, from slaves. And you can, I mean, it's just a really beautiful thing, real interactive, walking through. It's an odd place. I'll tell you this. It's an odd place, much like any of that stuff is, to walk through with white people.
I was just thinking the same thing. I was wondering if that's what you were going to say.
Yeah, it's it, and you don't really think much of it I until you if get I
would,
there.
Would that mess with, I wonder.
It's here. It's so there's these in the park. They've got these slave quarters, like, you know, these mock-ups of these old slave quarters and these like a slave town. They've got this beautiful exhibit or this piece of art that is this sort of faux, but it's real like a cotton feel that you can walk through, and there's these, you know, statues of people in the, you know, working in the cotton field. And so, like, for me, it's kind of a pilgrimage in a sense. Like, I'm walking through it, I'm seeing and feeling how I'm looking and I'm going, this is what my life would have been like if I had been born then. In a different time. Right? And so I'm thinking about that. And what I'm assuming is that the people who are there who are white, they're thinking the same thing about me, right? They're going, This
is what you would have been.
Yeah, they're thinking, oh, this has got to be so hard for him because he's thinking about how his people were that place. And then I feel like I'm on display, right? Like, I feel like I have to emote appropriately, right? Because there seems to be this audience, you know what I mean? Or I have to not emote too much as to make them uncomfortable with my emotion, as if I'm looking at this and now triggered in such a way that I'm looking at white people going, yeah, I'm so mad at you. You know what I mean? Which, just to be clear, that whole experience while I was there in Montgomery, I had to wrestle with that anger, right?
Real.
Yeah. Okay. And we talked about that. We had a great time. Brian Stevenson, who ultimately spurred all this, he was along the way with us for most of the time and gave us speeches and stuff and that kind of, and then we had these small groups that we'd engage because it was a mixed group. It was white, black, Hispanic, whatever. Asian, we were all in there having these conversations. I got the pleasure of leading and facilitating some small group conversation around it. But one of the questions you had to wrestle with was, you know, what were your feelings as you were going through all this? And, and anger was a real, a real feeling that I was constantly doing. But it was a, anyway, it was a fascinating deal to sit, to your point, to be on the streets of Montgomery. And Montgomery is one of those cities that shuts down at like 8 o'clock, right? It's not a sundown town anymore. It's not like all the black people got to get out. But the town just shuts down. It's just a small place. And we're walking through the streets. It's funny, I'm there, and there's some of the major racial reconciliation ministries in the United States are all there, right? So Threaded, obviously, is there. Me, Living Undivided with Chuck Mingo is there. Josh Clemens from One Race is there. Latasha Morrison is there. Be the Bridge. And we're all hanging out. And Latasha and I are walking down the streets of Montgomery. It's like, it's dark. So it's, you know, it's like 8:30, no cars. And we're walking down the street. You look up to your right, and we just come out of Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. This was the place where Dr. King did his pastorate in Montgomery. It's not where the ministry, if the Montgomery bus boycott started, but it's where he did his pastorate. So we were just in there with the pastor who's over the church now, talking to us about some history there. Walk out on the street, and we look over to our right in the Capitol, which is Montgomery's the capital of Alabama. It's lit up in the distance all the way down this really long street. And you realize this is the street that when Selma, all the Bloody Sunday and the marches, all they were doing was trying to do a protest march from Selma to Montgomery to the Capitol. And this is where they would have ended up. And so you're looking and you're standing on these streets where these folks were fighting for the right to vote and all these different things were coming. This is where they would have come. And then you look over on another street and you've got this car, this streetcar, and it represents the spot in which Rosa Parks was kicked off the bus because she wouldn't give up her seat, which ultimately sparked the Montgomery bus boycott, which is taking place in Montgomery, which ultimately many would say sparked the civil rights movement. So you're standing on this hallowed ground of where this freedom movement began in the United States. And it's an awe-inspiring moment and feeling to be there, all while you're going through some of these museums and seeing these monuments about the history of slavery, terrorism, you know, just oppression in the midst of it. It's just a kaleidoscope of different feelings and emotions that you have to reckon with a bit. So anyway, it was a good time.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So
that's interesting, man. Yeah. That is interesting stuff. I think a lot about sometimes when like when we were in Tulsa.
Yeah.
And we were going through the museum there and there were some white persons there. I didn't feel exactly what you felt like even then. And maybe I would feel what you feel in that film, but I was wondering like, what are they actually, what are they thinking? Like what is, I know what I'm thinking. I know what I expected other black persons would be thinking and feeling. But I wondered, I wonder what people were thinking. And it's probably not obviously a monolith thought, like different people think different things, but, like what you just said, like all of that, all these things have what feels to me like would be a extra resonance for us as black persons to be in these spaces where like for Tulsa is the Black Wall Street. Like, man, this is the city where this is the spot where this thing was or this bomb happened or these lives were taken. And I don't know. So it's an interesting thought. And it, I don't know, maybe I should visit Montgomery. Maybe I should face my fears.
You should face the fears.
I'm cool to go.
I know you'd be cool. Look, if you can go to Tulsa and the trip that ultimately, like we were talking about the cohort just a minute ago, and part of what we do at the cohort at the end is we all met in Oklahoma City, and we did kind of a cultural appreciation and animus tour, if you will. In Oklahoma City, we went to the First Americans Museum. Which again, if you haven't been to the First Americans Museum, it's a very museum. It's a very new museum, but it articulates so much of the culture of First Americans, First Nations, Native Americans in the United States, and it deals with the oppression in the animus, right? And it's particularly looking at about 39 different tribes that are located in Oklahoma themselves, and so you realize how they got there based on the ways in which they were being kind of pushed across the United States via I'm losing the name of the move in which that pushed it. It'll come to me in
trailer two.
No, I'm thinking, you know, you got the Doctrine of Discovery, but then there's the Manifest Destiny. There we go. Oh, there yes, the Manifest Destiny. That's moving. Thank you very much. That's all right. moving them forward, right? And so we did that for a day, and that was really powerful, good stuff to engage. And then the next day we went over into Tulsa, and we went through the Greenwood area, which is where the Black Wall Street was, which is where the massacre, the Tulsa massacre of 1921 happened. So we went to the museum that's there, and we did a walking tour.
Really well done, by the way. Yeah. I really appreciated that. I really appreciate what felt to me like a lot of intentionality and creativity and investment. It'd be easy to put up a museum, and it's hard to say mail it in, but you could mail in a museum.
Mailed in museums, right, for sure.
Sort of do the normal. You could do just enough just to say, hey, it's a museum, we did it. But that felt, you know, the experience felt very intentional and thought through in it, and it communicated that they cared about what they were doing, and I really appreciated that. If you get a chance to go and visit some of those things in Tulsa, you should.
Yeah, and what I love is a lot of these new museums are doing that. So when I went to Montgomery, I went there 3 years ago with my family, and they had a version of the Legacy Museum there, but they were always talking, they're like, hey, we're expanding. And I didn't realize how much they were going to expand. So when I went to the Legacy Museum in Montgomery last week, it was exceptionally bigger than when I was there before.
Yeah.
And if you went right now, based on the time you were in Tulsa, you would have seen it does very similar things.
A similar thing.
As far as interactive, creative. Mm-hmm. Even the way when you walk in, if you remember when you walk into Tulsa, there's like this video that's kind of playing in the back.
Yeah, right there.
Same thing when you walk into this Legacy Museum. It's a bit eerie because it's not a video, whereas in Greenwood Rising, they have a video of some stuff going on that shows the community and all these kind of things and the evolution of the community, whatnot. Yeah. It's really great. But when you walk into that Legacy Museum, it's literally it's a room that's all dark, and it's got this LED screen up against the wall that you're looking at, and it's just waves. It's like you're in the ocean, and you're just riding on a boat. Sound, waves, like it doesn't change. It's representing like the trek from from, you know, the West Africa to the Americas and to other places. In fact, Bryan Stevenson tells this really great story. I'll shorten it because he did as well. But going to Lagos, I believe, is where he was going. But he meets this guy in Lagos. He's supposed to be going someplace else, but he gets stuck in Lagos, and this guy comes and gets him and kind of tours him around the city, and it's all like late at night because whatever, they just are up all the time.
Yeah.
And Brian's like, man, I've been up for a while, bro. I need to go home and get some rest because I got up in the morning, got to do some stuff. And the guy's like, okay, I just got one more place. And he takes him down to the shore, and they climb over all of this stuff, and they get to the shore, and they're just looking out over the ocean. And Brian's just kind of taking in the salt air and kind of looking out, and he looks over at the guy, and the guy's got these tears coming down his cheek, and clearly emotional. And Brian's like, hey, what's wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was like, this is where we lost you. And he said, I'm sorry, but this is the point where we lost you. Mm-hmm. This connection between this African who had been taken to America and this African that had been left behind. So it was a really powerful thing. So you have that in your mind, right, as you go into this museum, because he had told you that story right before.
Right. And then you're
sitting here at these waves. Right. Yeah. So really powerful stuff. But to your point, it's very interactive. A lot of those museums, the First Americans was interactive.
Yeah.
Really great.
Another one.
For kids.
And another one that's expanding.
Absolutely. Yeah. Expanding. So I'm loving that because I know one of the things that Brian and his movement, EGI, is talking about is that there needs to be a cultural, I'm going to use the word reckoning, but a cultural reckoning with the history of our country in a way in which we appropriately lament and memorialize the things that happened. And of course, we've gone through seasons where people, you know, are offended by memorials. There's other memorials that are being put up that kind of represent a historical piece that doesn't really function in the midst of our current union and really highlights, animosity towards our current union states. And so he talks about that, like we need these monuments in the place in these memorials and these museums. And so that's just an encouragement probably to those who are listening. Like, look, if you haven't been, it's a great spot. And I can't speak to it because you were talking about it, but I can't speak to it from firsthand of what it's like as a person who's not the cultural who doesn't represent the culture of what the Memorial Monument and Museum was for, except being in the first Americans, right?
Yeah.
But even in there, I don't the part I'm cast as in the story of the first Americans. Mm. Even in the first Americans, black people are cast as either people who worked together with them or those who were even enslaved by them.
Right.
Right. So I don't know what it's like to be in the role of the oppressor going into a first Americans, mm-hmm. going into Tulsa, going
certainly
into a legacy.
Primary spot.
There's right.
Some
exactly.
Buffalo
just
soldier stuff.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Black to Indian, but yeah, it wasn't.
It wasn't quite. So I don't have that. I don't know what it's like. So the people who were with us, not there were some who were white folks who were there, and there was an emotional reaction to it, but it wasn't a reaction of shame, right? In such a way that they ran from the conversation. But there was something else that they felt in the midst of that made them want to go deeper in and do something different with their lives. They want to, they want to continue the work that we're doing right here, mm-hmm. And make things better and make it move forward while they recognize the past, mm-hmm. right? So, but I'd be interested to hear some of those things. It's helpful. But I love that sort of connection in all those places. There's kind of like, it's a connecting people to the experience of others, right? Like, you know, the having to see the world through the eyes of a slave. There's a lot of stuff in the Legacy Museum that shows like moms being and dads being separated from their kids in movies and stories
right,
and stuff. And,
right.
and that's not a black thing. That's just humanity.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's
certain
aspects, that speaks into the black culture of how we've created things, how we create those, how we create music. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I know that you love, you know, obviously growing up in the black church, which I didn't get to do, but, you know, 25% of my year when I was with my grandmothers, but, you know, black music is such a big piece of that as well. You know what I mean? And how that works. So, I don't know. Any thoughts about some of that stuff?
Yeah. Like, recently we were – so yesterday, like – well, I had a conversation with worship pastor that I work with sometimes. And we were talking about – I challenged him in some ways with diversity in music, and
because that's a thing that your church is trying to grow in.
Well, our church is trying to grow in that, and other churches are trying to grow in that. And so we're trying to figure out, because, you know, for our church there is a growing diversity of cultures represented. And so I was like, hey, you know, there was a service that we'd done, and he pulled in Andre Crouch. Oh my gosh, what's the name of the song? The blood that Jesus shed for me way down on Calvary, the blood that gives me strength from day to day. His blood will never lose its power. I had to work through it. The blood will never lose its power. And he sang it at the end of the service. I think it was a Good Friday. So he sang it at the end of the service. It's kind of the walkout song. Well, it was the end. It was the last song. And it really ignited something different. I mean, when I heard it in my space, this sort of song that was connected to my black church experience, but this wasn't a black church. And despite the fact that the worship pastor that we have, he is he takes his job very seriously and understands and wants to create worship spaces with excellence. And so he's like, man, I worked on that song all week because I wanted to make sure that, you know, I did it well. Nothing's worse than grabbing someone another cultural song and doing it poorly. You know,
I am so glad that he said that, because not everybody comes in there.
Yeah.
Like that,
so part of his hesitation is that he wants to do these cultural songs, but he wants to do them well, and that sometimes maybe slows down implementation a little bit so that he can get that. Shout out. We need some. So. Expand our worship team, and he's totally open to it, to people who have these different sentimentalities and things. But the question was, man, how do you really do that? And what I was talking about, how this black music, or it doesn't matter what, whether it's black or the gospel, black gospel music or other cultural music, the point of it is not to have representation, and this is where we might differ a little bit.
All right.
The primary point for me is not representation. I think representation is important, right? But the primary point isn't representation. For me, there's, we've talked about this before, there's a narrative that the gospel intersects in multiple cultures. And we get to experience God differently and get more pieces of God as we interface with those narratives. The music is innately pulled out of that cultural narrative. And so, for instance, we've said before in episodes that if you are come from a Black church heritage, then a lot of the music, not all of it, but a lot of the music is about suffering and how the gospel intersects a life of struggle, not suffering, of struggle and getting
suffering
through.
Too.
Suffering's part of it.
Yeah.
But a lot of the old heritage songs, the music is created in the narrative atmosphere of struggle. And as a result of that, we have songs that really resonate to persons, whether you're a Black person or not, who are in seasons where things are very difficult and you don't know a way out of no way. And the gift of cultures, I think, is that the music that can be pulled from each one of these cultures can be pulled into a mission, a ministry experience that speaks to that narrative that we all live in.
Yeah.
It's just that they're kind of, if you will, specialists in that particular yeah. part of the narrative.
That's one way to say it.
Yeah. Like yeah. they're special. And again, there, it's not the only songs that are there. There's tons of songs about praise and about
sure.
the majesty of God and the beauty of God and the wonder of God's grace and all of those things. But there is a specialness about the narrative, and each culture kind of has something about that. And so when you are crafting a service, I think the point is not, hey, we want to have Black people on the stage or whatever. It's about, hey, there are places where each one of your cultures help minister to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be unafraid to reach into the way the gospel intersects your culture and bring that into a moment where we all get to experience that and enjoy that together. And in so doing, what we're really doing is just saying, hey, there's a part of, you know, each, it is that which joint, that which every joint supplies, you know. And so we were talking about that. And so I was like, hey, well, the problem with that is that people get uncomfortable and they want their style and they want it their way at their volume, at their at their time length.
You're noticing a particular word you keep using in there. There.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They want it their stuff. So we had recently a worship and prayer night, and I get a chance to craft that night for our church. And I told our guys, like, hey, man, I think I'm going to try. I didn't know up until we did it. Let me finish my thought. I told him, I said, hey, we're going to try some old school spirituals, basically songs that don't require any instruments. They're congregationals. And I'm going to pull some stuff that I grew up with, stuff that I used to watch hum while I'm doing the dishes with. Mm-hmm. Right. Some of y'all know a little bit about that. And
humming or doing the dishes,
humming or doing it, or both at the same time, right? Or groaning while you're doing the dishes. Sometimes
I'm like snapping green beans,
green beans in front of. but yeah, so we tried it, man. We gave it a shot. We came through. We had a prayer and worship night, and man, I was like, okay, guys, I'm just gonna take y'all back. We're gonna try a couple of songs. I had tried it already before one time with the young adults. They were with me for about 3 minutes. We did two songs. We did
this. Wait, are you saying that these
congregational songs?
Yeah.
I tested it out a couple months ago.
Yeah.
In a young adult thing when we had our worship leaders weren't going to be able to be there. We didn't have them out, and so I just had to take it. So I did it. And they were with me for about 3 minutes, and then they just enjoyed me struggle through my solo for the rest of the for the other part of it.
He sounds so nice. I'll just let him finish the song.
Yeah, so
he seems to know it. We don't know what it is.
So, but we tried it last night, man, and it was very cool, man. The room came with us, and it was an interesting experience. We added that, so we opened the night with sort of your normal, our church worship music, and then this was a shock to the system. And then we did some liturgies as well in this, which was designed to attach to another culture's way of thinking through worship that wasn't entirely instrument based, but yeah. It was all about congregational involvement. We wanted the music to be something that we all sang, and we didn't depend on the instruments to help us with. We read the scripture and did the liturgy together, and it was designed to create, to help people connect to something maybe that was in their past, part of something that they were accustomed to, and bring it all as a smorgasbord to this one particular night. And by the end of the night, what I heard from people, the amount of people that walked up to me and said, man, I haven't done that or done that in a long time. You took me back to my childhood, was people from all over, all the different cultures, right? We have black people say, I haven't sung that song in forever. That makes me think of my grandmother.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. Remember. Do it every time. You should try it in Sunday morning, see who people do it. I had a white couple come to me and say, man, I haven't done liturgies since I was a kid. That really took me back to a piece of something that I grew up with that I've forgotten about, that we never do. And so it was successful in some ways in helping bridge what is a kind of multicultural worship experience that tried to pull from multiple narratives. I thought it was a really, I thought it ended up working out. I was very nervous about it. I don't get too nervous. There's a little bit nervousness with anything, but I don't get too nervous. But this one I was nervous about mostly because we were very clear. I was talking to the worship leader, and we were like, hey, we're loosely planning tonight. You know, I'm a plan, like, let's get it locked in. And this was my first one for this church. None of the pastors or the elders are there other than myself. And
pretty safe. Safe, in that moment, but maybe not afterwards,
right? Like, because if you do it and it's a problem, they're like, that's why, what was you doing, right? So safe-ish, like, you know, people had come and they'd been used to a different version of a worship night. This was going to be something that they hadn't done, and so a part of me was just nervous about that, but it was beautiful how God put it all together. So anyway, you brought up black gospel music, and it made me think about that experience and how not just black gospel music, but how wonderful it is to have multiple versions of it. And we didn't tailor it. Like, we didn't say, hey, we're going to give you a diverse experience. It was just that, hey, we're just going to invite you into worshiping the way we worship. And we're just going to do it. And everyone did something that was a little uncomfortable for them and something that was very familiar to them at the same time. I thought it worked out well.
Those are the hardest pieces, right? I think that's the fear that everybody has in the midst of this conversation around multicultural church building, right? We've seen multi-ethnic, where you have just a diverse picture of people.
Right.
You mentioned, hey, we can put people on the stage that look different.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is that differentiation between multi-ethnic church and a multicultural church, where you're actually uniquely recognizing that there is a kind of special skill, if you will, that each of these cultures or even racial groups bring to the table that's unique in the way that God is, if I can say, demonstrating and displaying himself in the world, that requires a complementary engagement of the church to get the fullness of who God is. And so you're bringing in these different cultures so that you can get a taste of that. And so that night, what you're talking about is, okay, we're not going to just have somebody who looks different singing and engaging in the same culture of this particular church. Let's call it a white culture. But rather, we recognize that in the midst of this church, we actually do have multi-ethnicities who actually bring different cultures. And we're going to just try to exemplify some of that in the midst of our praise and worship time.
Yeah.
And what you said, I think, is so important that people are not used to, because this is not an American way of thinking about it, if I can say it like that, is that we actually major on comfort.
Right.
Like, that is a major piece of how we believe we are entitled to live.
Right.
Is that everything should be...
Everything should tailor itself to us.
Right. Everything should be... I should be comfortable at all times.
Yeah.
And when I'm not, there's something unholy going on.
Right.
So,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, something...
Y'all need to figure it out.
Figure it out. Change it. It's not right. We should not be doing it. But I think that as you maneuver through multicultural spaces, like in a true multicultural church, and here's what I would say is, in the true form of the church.
Of the church. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. At some point,
it's just the church.
That, right. Learning how to be what it is.
Everybody should be uncomfortable at some aspect and comfortable too.
Yeah.
It's like the body. Like, when you're doing... Let's just say I was watching a college gymnastics tournament last night. And so if you think about what a body, like an actual physical body, has to go through if it's a gymnast going through that tournament, right? There's times that you are on your hands, right? There are times that you are on your butt. There's times that you are upside down, right? There's people like flipping in the air and turning, like every part of the body that is in working on a, that a gymnast is using is not comfortable all the time, nor is it doing things that it's supposed to do all day. Right. Again, these folks who are
standing on your hands, you're not supposed to do that.
Exactly. They're on a balance beam, like on their hands,
yeah,
flipping and landing on their hands. Like, no, that's not what it is. I think the body of Christ is very similar, right? Like, there are times that when we function in our nimbleness, right, in our agility, as those who are taking the gospel to the world, right, that there's going to be times that, yeah, you're just going to be doing stuff that's not comfortable to you, or you're not even going to be involved in the work that is happening because it's actually not, it's not in your ability to do. Like I saw a young lady do this back flip on a balance beam, and she, when she tried to land, she missed her first foot and ended up landing on the balance beam on her shin and then fell off the balance beam. Right, it was terrible to watch. Why? Because the shin is not meant
to
be the one that, that breaks your fall. I don't care what Marvel tells you,
you're
right?
Not supposed to land
to land on your knees.
No
and
superhero
your
pose.
No, none of that stuff, right? So that's part of where I think we got off is that we think that we've functioned as, in some ways, in these sort of segregated spaces and very culturally based and homogenous spaces where everybody's trying to do everything and they're actually not specially designed.
Yeah,
for the communication of the gospel.
It's well said. I walked away from that night. Our church is working through discipleship and how we're thinking about that. And as I've been thinking about features, dynamics of a discipleship environment. You know, and I keep coming up with different things in my lab. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that popped up in my lab is right what you're talking about, which is getting used to discomfort.
Yeah.
Right. If you're going to be a disciple, you have to realize that discomfort is the norm more than comfort is, that you're always being pushed out of the place that you're used to, that you're comfortable in, into a new place, into a growing place.
Yeah.
And growth by its nature and formation by its very nature is not stagnant and is not, does not care about your preferences. You know, if you want stronger arms, you're going to have to do the work that requires stronger arms,
which is going to be uncomfortable.
Which is going to be uncomfortable for some, and for some people, they enjoy it, right?
Well, no, it's not about enjoyment. Like, even if you enjoy,
it's true. You still, it's pain regardless.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Uh-huh. Yeah, so you're doing it. But there may be some of the stuff that you like. I hate every aspect of it,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so if you're going to do whole body growth, right, you're growing your whole body. It's probably, there may be some pieces of it that you kind of enjoy, that you have a tolerance for, and you can accept a certain level of discomfort with. And there's other parts of it like, this is completely uncomfortable, and I just don't want to deal with it at all. But if you want full growth, you got to do, all of it. And this is one of those spaces where our, like you're saying, our American sentimentality is that, this is our space, and it should fit me. You know, it's the addiction to self is that I like the things that I find myself in, and I like the people that I find myself in, because what I like about those things is me.
Me,
I like me in this space. I like that you reflect me, and I like that you reflect me, and I like that you reflect me, and so we spend our life and our days thinking through and accepting the things that reflect back to us what we like best about ourselves and rejecting persons who don't reflect that. Whereas the Christian mindset, the Christian discipleship journey is about seeing and loving the Christ in all things and pursuing and loving the Christ in all things. That's not us at all, but finding the unique aspect of Christ in those things and inviting ourselves into that space. And I'm saying that as someone who enjoys what I enjoy and don't take a lot of risk and trying new things. So, but I do think the journey is to not base your life and your relationships, your spiritual and cultural, your spiritual experiences and your discipleship environments on what you enjoy.
Yeah.
But rather, there's something about God, like you said, there's something about Christ in this that I need more of, and that I can appreciate, and that I can celebrate, and I can connect to. And that should be the gravity that pulls us together, right? The Christ should be the center of gravity that pulls all things inward to itself, that holds all things together. And we live our lives with me being that gravity. And so I only pull the things that are like me,
yeah,
you know, to me. And everything else that's not like me, I reject, or I feel judged by, or whatever, fill in the blank.
Which is a hard, I mean, that's a hard, because all that sounds great, right?
Yeah.
We sit here and we rap about that and we talk about that kind of stuff. But, you know, as my wife always says, you do what you really want to do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's no forcing. There's no forcing it. You know, there's lots of people who talk about, you know, they look in the mirror and they go, I don't like what I see. And they go, man, I need to go to the gym. I need to eat better, whatnot. But they don't end up going to the gym, right?
I feel attacked.
I just say the words, you know what I mean? And however people get triggered is how they
get
triggered.
Hey, man, I got a strategy of hope, okay?
Okay, that's fine.
The strategy of hope is not working, but
I hope that when I go to the mirror,
my dad just like, you can't hope the ball in. You got to shoot it in.
that's right. But, you know, it's real, right? Like, you know, even those, you know, when I go to the gym, like, there's certain things that I really like to do and things I don't like to do, right? And so I have to be. I have to have a better reason of why I'm doing it. I hate doing ab work. And all the folks in my gym, when we're done with the major workout, they're ready to do some ab work. And I'm like, I'm going to go do this bench press right here. You know what I'm saying? Like, let me work on these curls. Y'all go ahead. Let me get these triceps in place. You know what I mean? The stuff that, you know. So all that to say is the hardest part about this convo is it's like we can sit here and talk in these microphones until we're blue in the face. You know what I mean? The change and the pursuit has got to come from inside you. It's got to be something that you almost either, I would say that there's probably some kind of catalytic event that has to happen in your life that makes you want to change it. Right.
You think so? I think for some people, I think, cause I keep thinking back, like looking at scripture, first of all, I had the song, Who Do You Love? Are you? I don't know why I had it in my mind, because the question is, who do you love? People say, I love Jesus. And then are you for sure? Right? Are you sure that you love Jesus? Right? Because if you did, then you would love the things. You would love whenever Jesus shows up in something, you would love that. I'm a Kobe fan. So if you're going to be a Kobe Bryant fan, a true Kobe Bryant fan. We don't have to debate it.
I'm not.
But whatever Kobe's name is on, if I'm a fan, I'm attracted to that thing, whatever his name happens to be on, right? If I'm not a Kobe fan, I'm not a LeBron fan. So I don't care what LeBron's name is on. I'm not going to give any extra attention to anything that LeBron's name's on because I don't care about LeBron. But if Kobe's name is on it, you at least have my attention. You know, at the very minimum, I'll look at Kobe's doing that. I'll look at it. It's a small example, but if we love Jesus, then we will pursue these things. Now, in the scriptures, we have Peter who is chilling at the end of this whole thing, at the end of John. And he's like, he's just hanging out and he's gotten comfortable again. You know, he's enjoying fishing. Fishing is what he enjoys. The whole thing is over with, and Jesus, and maybe this is a catalytic event. Jesus shows up and says, do you love me? Right. And then he's like, well, feed my sheep, but be about what I'm about. Right. And he asked him that three times. And it makes me wonder, like, sometimes I think it's just learning to live from the place of Christ likeness and Christ loveness instead of self love. And
yeah,
it's just hard to.
Well, but I don't disagree, but I think that.
But you think something has to happen. There's a catalytic event.
And again, a catalytic event can be anything.
It could be a conversation.
Right. Because, I mean, thinking about, you know, the Kobe analogy, it's right. It's like what you're assuming is that somebody already loves Kobe. But if you're just a basketball fan and you've got a Kobe, LeBron, Jordan kind of conversation, there's something that usually triggers like, hey, this is why I like Kobe. This is why I like LeBron. This is why I like Jordan. And even to your point, The thing I'm pushing into is, for me, I would think that, yes, if I, like, the love of Christ, the desire to want to be closer and to experience Christ more, to be experience what God has for his creation and even for me more, should drive me, but it doesn't. Right? I'm not saying me, but if I'm that person who's not pushing towards that, they're not. Why? Because they actually love their comfort more.
Right.
Than they love Jesus, right?
That's the whole first love
comment. Yeah, and it's that whole thing. And it's, I think about, you know, the book of Amos, right? You've got plenty of people who are doing all the things.
Yeah.
They're doing the worship services. They're doing their offerings. Mm-hmm. They've got all their musical instruments, all those things. But but they're still enslaving, you know, selling people into slavery, ignoring the poor, denying legal representation, all those things. And God is like, all that stuff, I don't even hear all that religiosity that you are displaying because you're actually not connected to the truth, which is me. Like, you're not following after me and modeling me. You don't desire to be like me. You desire to do who you do, who you are.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where we get in our construct, this differentiation, if I can say it like this, between a cultural Christianity and a committed one or a consecrated one. We live in a society that has been painted from its political inception, if you will, as the headquarters for Christianity. And so there's a way in which we have been, for most of the time, it's changing. Mm-hmm. We've just been doing things that we just assume to be Christian by living and doing. We assume that the music that we sing at the church is the Christian music.
Right.
It's not a version. It's how you do it. This structure that we've created, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
And it's, what's great is about it is it's for us, whatever we've created. So we love it because it's for us.
Because we're in it.
Right. But this segregated space, it's not the truth, right? We talk about the nature and what's natural, right? Mm-hmm. We say these kinds of pithy things. Well, it's only natural that someone would want to be around people who are just like them. That's a lie. That is not natural.
That's the wrong natural.
The real natural is what is displayed. What God gives us, I think it's Isaiah 11, where he starts to go, hey, in the kingdom, right, the child lies down next to the viper in the viper's den and gets no harm. The sheep lies down with the lion, right?
Yeah.
It's this place where in our human nature we would go, that's unnatural for that to happen. And God is going, no, what I have created is the natural, what you have created become is the unnatural.
Yeah.
So we sit around and keep telling the devil's lie, which is it's only natural that I would be around people who are just like me. But that's actually the thing that is keeping the church from becoming the church.
Right.
And so I say that there's got to be maybe the catalytic event is you hear that for the first time, right? Maybe you're listening to this podcast and you're like, oh my gosh, I never thought about that. So that's your catalytic event. But something's got to trigger you because because the sin nature, the flesh, runs to the everything's got to be comfortable and just like me. Mm-hmm. But the spirit moves towards something different, something more diverse, because God has created with very much intentionality and particularity. Mm-hmm. He's created the diversity because that's the way he is going to display himself most accurately in the world to as many people in the world, because he is trying to get all the world, tribes, tongues, and nations to be a part of who he is and be a part of his family. And so I do think that, you know, where we are right now is the catalytic event is that we need something. We need something to trigger us. And it could be something that's painful or it could be something that's really wonderful.
Yeah.
Some people like even inspirational.
I was about to say, inspiration is a catalytic, and a lot of us have been moved towards some because inspiration is a part of it. We have a lot of things working against us. We have a series of trained behaviors and cultural environment built. The cultural environment is built around momentum that doesn't flow in the direction of what we're talking about. Yeah. Right? We're taught to compete. We're taught to live from a space of scarcity and protect ourselves and to love ourselves most and to expect that others would do that for us and love us in return. And so there's a big conversation to have about that and about what how that's related to Jesus when he says, I give you life and life more abundant. I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get a chance to talk about that soon. So you're in my, this part of the conversation is in my headspace. As well, far as some sermon stuff that I'm thinking about.
Yeah. And I think, about. You know, if we land the plane to some extent on this thing, it circles back to even the experience in Montgomery last week. You know what I mean? What it represents, the things that we saw and the things that we are memorializing and putting museums around is a recognition. It's articulating all the things you talked about. There is this love of me in the space, and to the point where we saw in our own history where we decided that the church and that people, humans even, look, function, and do certain things. And when they don't do them the way we have designed them to do, or what we think is holy and what we think God has done, then we do things to them, right? We try to force it. We bring violence. We try to build power structures that maintain our values and what we're trying to do. And in many ways, because we have done those, created those values in a homogenous vacuum, if you will, we miss out on all the stories that God is trying to tell through humanity. And so you miss stuff. We joke about Alabama. One of the things when I was in Alabama last week is I just thought about, like, I thought about what a waste it was. Not like a wasteland, Alabama, but just what a vast wasted opportunity. I kept constantly coming back to this realization, like, so much energy was put into lies, into oppression, like,
yeah.
And the waste of what happened is you got this Alabama. You go to Alabama, it's one of the Mississippi and Alabama are perhaps the worst school systems in the country. And what's fascinating is, or the way I look at it is, they have some of the biggest populations of African Americans there, right now. Someone like, yeah, I told you about African Americans, they make schools bad. No, that's not what I'm saying. Because they didn't give opportunity for these African Americans to go to school.
Right.
And to learn and to have the books and to engage, they kept them and structured their lives in such a way that they couldn't even experience certain aspects of education that others were getting. That they missed out on the gold of intelligence that existed in those people because they didn't even see them as people.
Right.
They saw them as something else. Mm-hmm. And they justified this in very religious ways at the same time. So I just thought, what a waste of so much intelligence and gold in a people that were down in that space.
Yeah.
And they ended up creating these other schools, these other church schools that were private where just white people went. And white people are great, but white people by themselves are incomplete, right? Imagine what our country would have been if we had actually looked and said, hey, instead of us coming to this, and I say us, instead of Europeans coming to this country and looking at this vast landscape and going, man, there's so much possibility.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking conquer, they go, look at these folks who are here. What can we do together? Mm-hmm. Right? And then if you're going and traveling to Africa and you're seeing the people, hey, come here and help us build this land together, as opposed to there's a terrible and wonderful display in the midst of this Legacy Museum. It's a digital display where it has the world map, and it shows the progression of what I would call expropriation of human life from Africa away from the west coast of Africa into the Americas. And it starts with like little dots that kind of move and whatever. And as you go along, it becomes this river of dots that are going to South America, Haiti, North America. And it's this middle passage, right? And it's just it looks like there's these black dots coming out of like the Horn of Africa. It looks like they've punctured the Horn of Africa and oil is just draining out of it. It looks like all you're picturing is all this resource, all this intelligence, all this possibility just being drained from that continent, brought over to these other continents and utilized to build, and I'll say United States, build the United States. 60% of the, the economic growth of the United States has been built on slavery, and not paying a dollar for it because you didn't think they were worth it. But yet their skills are the things that we're literally standing on. So I say all that to come back in this idea of we huddle in these places of comfort and familiarity. And in doing so, we not only rob ourselves of the ability to learn and grow from others, but we, in many ways, from that place, we do terrible harm to others because we don't see them the way we see ourselves, as those who are made in the image of God, who have a unique, special skill and purpose that they can bring to make the world better when we combine and collaborate together. So anyway, that's look, we just went into all kinds of stuff on this.
All kinds of different things.
Yeah, yeah.
Different things.
Yeah, so hey, welcome back, Color Commentary folk. You know what I'm saying?
Hopefully y'all just the ramblings of us today. I don't know if it was killer ramblings, but I don't know how we're gonna title this.
We'll figure it out. Just to come back, you know what I mean? We're just kinda getting people back in the space and trying to set some of the foundational pieces that I think we function out of around where culture and diversity, if you will, works, especially with the idea we're in Texas, where all those diversity DEI programs and things are being kicked out of different organizations and stuff. This is part of, and again, I've been in those programs and I've seen some of that stuff, and I might kick some of those things out as well. But from the church, our DEI program, if you will, has been given to us through the scriptures, through the tribes and tongues and nations that God created with these specific things.
It's Christ. How can Christ be divided?
That's right.
How can he himself
be divided?
Be divided, right? There's no inequality in him. There is no lack of inclusion.
It is the inclusive in space.
Yeah. It is diversity. It's together in one. It's all those things.
Well, it's good for us to be thinking and talking about that. Just even walking down some of that historical aspects to remember. As we do this in a couple of weeks,
our series that we're probably going to be working on, should we?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. I want to talk about Juneteenth because that's going to be coming. Those of you who are in the Dallas area, we've got some Juneteenth stuff coming down. So make sure that you are going to wearethreaded.org and checking out our events page. But if you have not been a part of and not subscribed to our Instagram page and Facebook, you need to do that now. We have gotten a team together. You're going to see a lot more things coming out from us via our social media aspects. That's going to be educational. That's going to be opportunities for you to engage, to comment and have conversation around. But then also you're going to see some of the events that are happening, not only here, but in other parts of the country as well. And just to hear from us in other ways other than just colored commentaries. So make sure that you're checking that out. It's we_are_threaded for our Instagram.
We are underscore threaded.
Did I say it backwards?
You said we underscore.
Oh, sorry. Threaded. You're right. We are underscore threaded.
Yeah. underscore threaded.
Yeah. So definitely check that out and be on the lookout for some things that are coming up from us in color commentary.
Definitely.
So love it. Love that we get to be back in here, brother.
Yeah,
good
man. Let's do it. We got YouTube. Yeah, come and see. I don't know. We'll talk about it later. Okay, we talked about the hints.
Yes, yes. We do have another episode coming at you here pretty soon that we recorded a little bit earlier. So it'll be fun. It'll be great. We're going to be in the midst of some of this AAPI month. We're going to be talking about some social justice stuff with our friend. So I look forward to you guys hearing that one coming up here too. So you know how we do it on Color Commentary. We love for you to come in here and get these colorful conversations by colorful people about Christianity, culture, and race. And so as you go out, we want you to continue to look through these different lenses and these perspectives and stay colored.
You have been listening to Color Commentary, powered by Threaded, a biblical reconciliation organization. To find out more about Threaded, check out wearethreaded.org.